and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and my co-host, Phil Jones, the Managing Director of Brother UK. Phil, good to see you.
Hi, Tim.
Well, it's that time of year again already, Phil. The Lincoln Grand Prix is only days away. The countdown to the Great British Monument has begun.
Yes, it's absolutely one of those races that I really look forward to. And having now done an edition in what was the Brother Neutral Service Vehicle a couple of years back, I got a real insight into how the race is won and what the course is like. So good to talk about that today in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, my goodness, we've got some pretty credible witnesses lined up to tell us what this race looks like from the inside. Dean Downing, whose victory in 2007, well, might be the most iconic of all time, given those incredible pictures. And we've got Becky Story, who won the race in 2022. We'll get the inside line on the organisational and commercial angles from the race organiser, Gary Coltman, one of just three people to have organised this race in its 69-year history. And we'll get some personal reflections from Velo UK editor Larry Hickmott on 25 years of covering this incredible race. Let's have a quick listen to Larry now.
I remember a friend of mine, a former pro who's been on the podium in the race, Gordon McCauley, telling me about how significant this race was about 25 years ago. I then went out there to photograph the race and started doing that. And I've now got this all this history from 2003. And the Lincoln Grand Prix is a beautiful race for a photographer. You've got a castle and a cathedral as a background. It's just amazing. And you see so much of the riders. They do 13 laps, the men, I think the women do eight. It's a small lap, about 8 miles. And it's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. The one of Dean Downing winning in 2007, it just showed every bit of emotion and excitement and buzz that you get from winning this monument. And same with Alex Richardson. The last two victories he's had in the race, in both of those, Alex is again showing what it means to him to win this monument of a race. And as someone who was there when we had all the other races like the Archer, Cotswolds, Havant, the Essex Grand Prix, et cetera, to only have really this race left, it's a mighty race. It really is. It is a race where bike racing is taken to the people. And the crowds on Michael Gate and the climb through the historic section of Lincoln, there's no other race that can match that. So Lincoln, ever since Ian Emerson put the race through that section of the city, it has become the huge race and popular race that it is. The heart of the race, the absolute pounding, beating heart of the race is the historic section of Lincoln. So yes, that's where I'll be. That's why I stay where I do during the race, because Michael Gate and Bale Gate, which follows Michael Gate, they are the key areas for moves to be made. And that's where you can actually see where the riders who are the strongest are actually feeling strong. It is going to be my birthday on the day, as it has been in the past. So it obviously is a very special event. It's also got the hill climb the night before, which is exciting. And for me, there's also a rider on that list who comes from Lincoln, emigrated to Australia with his family. And this is Joshua Ludman. And he's going to have his family there as well, part of his family, watching. And he actually does have a connection to Lincoln. So, and he rides for St. Piran. So, there's so many reasons for me to be really up for this race.
So wonderful to hear there from Larry. Phil, the beating heart of this race is the historic section in the centre of Lincoln.
You'd have to agree with that. I mean, it's beautiful. Lincoln is a really beautiful city. There's no doubt about that. But when you go up Michael Gate and you sort of get to the top and you have those twists and turns and you see the cathedral and you go out through the gates and all these sorts of things, it's a really picturesque place and what an iconic place to be holding a bike race. But with that stretch of Michael Gate being so iconic, you know, it's full of crowds, all the shops are open, the pubs are open, and it's absolutely everything that you'd want from a bike race on a hot summer's day, which let's cross our fingers it will be a hot summer's day, and full of race action.
From where I am, we've had 3 days of sunshine in a row now, so maybe spring has finally sprung, and where better to get a bit of sunlight than on Michaelgate, what a climb. Well, that's what we're going to talk about today in some detail. But before we get there, let's have a very quick roundup of the news from a Brother UK, Brother Cycling perspective. We've got two teams, of course, Das Hutchinson, Brother UK, and Brother UK on form. And both, I'm happy to report, are on fire at the moment. Das Hutchinson, Brother UK have won 4 National B races since the start of the season. Frankie Hall most recently won the Harrogate Nova Spring Road Race. Before that, it was Charlotte Hodgkins-Byrne who won the Dave Peck Memorial. Before that, Tamsin Miller won the Oakenclough Road Race, the second round of the Brother UK-sponsored Proper Northern Road Race Series. And Robin Clay kicked things off by winning Cape and Ray, the opening round of the Proper Northern Road Race Series. Brother UK-sponsored teams also occupied 2 of the 3 podium slots at the Dave Peck Memorial, the second round of the British Women's Team Cup. Let's hear now from those podium finishers. That was the winner, Charlotte Hodgkins-Byrne of Das Hutchinson Brother UK, and Lottie Dawson of Brother UK on form, who finished 3rd.
I was actually really pleased with this result, because it's not my best cycling result so far, but in terms of everything I've been learning and putting into training, I felt like I really was able to, put simply, I was able to do a race and actually think about it at the same time rather than just being like, oh God, I'm not sure exactly what I should be doing. I went into it with a very clear plan. My coach explicitly told me that I wasn't allowed to make any moves until an hour had gone by, because normally I'm very trigger happy with trying to just do something in the first 5 minutes, which is obviously stupid. And so, yeah, I waited and just watched a few people and kind of sussed out who was going well. The team, Ruth, Sean and I were racing together, so it was really good. We were able to do kind of counterattacks off each other. So Ruth went up the road. As soon as she came back, I then was like, right, the bunch is feeling a bit tired. This is a good time for me to go. So went over the top of her. I had 3 other riders chase on behind. And then, yeah, it was great. We managed to just really keep a good pace line going. One rider dropped off and then the 3 of us just carried on pace lining. And then it was great because we worked together for the whole course pretty much, which then really solidified that lead. And then on the final climb, I think Lydia attacked first. I was on her wheel and then I just went quite hard up the hill and yeah, won. So that was very nice.
I wasn't actually in too much pain, to be honest. I was certainly putting in some big turns on the front just to give us that gap. But I think we all worked so well as a little group. There was no one kind of holding back at all. We all fully committed and that was what was really nice. And I know Charlotte was definitely giving us a lot of encouragement. I couldn't really speak, but she definitely was shouting at us and giving us a lot of encouragement. Being in a team and actually kind of riding together and giving each other support, because prior to being with Brother on Form, I didn't really have any experience of that. Just being in a properly organised team is really helpful to me. I feel like we've bonded so much as a team this year. We're all looking out for each other. We're all happy when someone does well, but equally we'll cheer someone up when things haven't gone so well. That is a really nice thing to be part of.
So there were Charlotte Hodgkins-Byrne and Lottie Dawson. And these, Phil, are 2 riders with bright futures on and off the bike. Charlotte was an Olympic rower for Team GB. She's already been at the top of one sport and she's determined to reach the top of another. And Lottie Dawson from Brother UK on form, well, she's studying biochemistry at Nottingham University. This, I guess, is yet another example of Brother providing platforms to perform.
Yes, it is. And if we recall when we did the survey for the Elite Road Racing Task Force, one of the key questions was about what is the role of British road racing for people that want to ride bikes? And actually it was split straight down the middle. Half of it was because people want to try and pursue a professional pathway into becoming a professional road cyclist as a career. And actually half of it was actually that I just want to have a competitive hobby at the weekends that I can be really good at. And so it's wonderful to hear that you've got 2 individuals there, one obviously sponsoring a professional services career, another one currently studying and obviously with a potential career ahead of her. So yeah, we're really happy to hear that the things that we're doing is helping them to be the best versions of themselves.
Let's turn our attention now to Alice Sharp and Mia Griffin of Das Hutchinson Brother UK, because they have booked their tickets to the Olympic Games in Paris this summer. as riders on Cycling Ireland's Women's Team Pursuit Squad. Now, the Ireland Endurance Programme really is a story of success, and they will send their largest ever Women's Endurance Squad to an Olympic Games this summer. All of this despite not having a velodrome. The team actually has to head to Mallorca to train. They wrapped up qualification for the Olympics in Hong Kong at the final round of the UCI Track World Cup. And Alice Sharp of Das Hutchinson Brother UK was right at the heart of things. Let's have a listen now to Alice.
I think at the moment it hasn't really sunk in yet. Like, obviously there's still work to do to get to the start line and stuff, but it's important to celebrate even just qualifying, and especially what a monumentous thing that is for us at Cycling Ireland, because we've never qualified a women's team pursuit team, and obviously that qualifies Madison and Omnium as well. So yeah, it's really special and amazing for us to have qualified that full quota. It's just years and years of hard work. And I think the thing that's both great and so frustrating about team pursuit is that you have to be so pernickety and just, you know, so dialed in on every detail. So you often might go to a race and kind of not get out everything that the team is capable of. So I think often we made mistakes along the way, which kind of prevented us from going faster. But that final ride there in Hong Kong, I think, was like finally a representation of that hard work that we had put in. And yeah, I hope that the times continue to come down now. It's all about confidence as well, isn't it? We have that confidence that we are able to piece together a really good ride. And it's just about increasing that capacity and really committing to one another, to create another smooth and clean ride. I think for me, that doing the road's really like important for building form and confidence and kind of motivation. I do find it difficult to just kind of train. I like to race in between as well. So yeah, I hope to do perhaps ride London and a few of those other races on the calendar as well. I'll step away from the road like 5 weeks before the games. But other than that, yeah, I think it's a really important part of like my preparations.
So that was Alice Sharp. She's sort of a long-term member of the Brother Cycling family, Phil. She was on a team that we sponsored 5 or 6 years ago. She was early into the Cycling Ireland Endurance Programme in 2017. She's still going to race on the road despite having this very high profile engagement in Paris this summer.
Yeah, that's not a terrific story that over so many years, I'm not just talking about, you know, the involvement we've had with teams and stuff, but actually it's her own story.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's a quality road rider too. She was on Israel Premier Tech with Claire Steeles last year. She's ridden, you know, at the highest level of the women's sport on the road, and she's come back to continental level to pursue this dual program of road racing and Olympic track racing this summer. So what a signing from Simon Howes and Ian Watson, a very valuable addition to the squad. Let's finish this news roundup now with news of Brother UK on form competing at the junior women's Gent-Wevelgem. Now, any fan of professional cycling will not need me to explain about Gent-Wevelgem, one of the spring classics, and this is the junior version. Now, Mark Botley, the team manager, Phil, was off running the London Marathon to raise funds for Young Lives versus Cancer in memory of a former rider, Timmy James. So the squad was taken to Belgium by Paul Smith, who is the father of on-form riders Mia and Stella. They're based in Ireland, so he had a 4 a.m. start. Even to get to the ferry, it was well worth the effort. The junior Gent-Wevelgem in the past has been on a course that hasn't borne much resemblance to the pro race. This time it was different. They went up the Kemmelberg climb, which is the signature climb of that race, twice. And Grace Ward and Amelia Staunton, two of the on-form riders, were just outside the top 20, only 23 seconds behind the winner, Amelia Seaback. So a wonderful performance. Now, Paul regularly brings his daughters across from Ireland to the UK to race in the National Road Series. And as I say, he led the team while Mark was running the London Marathon. Let's have a listen to Paul.
We headed north from Leper and then dropped down left to Locher. And it was just full gas, fast type route. There was narrow roads, train tracks, a lot of street furniture with cobbles going through little towns. So I think this year the girls of all the teams really, really got a good insight into what it's like to race in Belgium with regards to one big loop, open roads, wind, the train tracks, the cobbles and Kemmelberg twice, which was brilliant. it turned out like the Kemmelberg didn't really do much damage in the race. It was more the flat parts with the open wind and the crashes. So every one of them did enjoy the Kemmelberg going up. But as hard as it was, I think it was very enjoyable for them all. It was such a big bunch. There was 130, I think 35 girls at it. And they were constantly battling a headwind and a crosswind the whole way out to the Kemmelberg. So me and Mark were of the illusion that regardless of where you were at the bottom of the Kemmelberg, it was that position was where you're going to be at the top. So Mark just always emphasizes to him, even at home in England or when we were over here in the Ross, it's really all about positioning and having the mental energy to constantly be thinking that I need to move up or I need to stay here, because the minute you blink, you're going to go out the back. And I think on races like Ghent, it really will happen, because it definitely, I think with our juniors, it was definitely the biggest junior girls only race they've ever done. I think it's huge, but like I said, they don't get big races like this. They do get them at home in England, but they're national series races with senior women. Even last year, we had 16-year-olds doing the Seacle Classic. That's very hard, not so much physically, because some of them are very, very strong, but it's mentally how they're able to be constantly thinking for 120, 30k to position, to eat, to drink, you know. So like I said, with the Ghent, it's the very same. So it's huge that they do get to do these junior girls only races. It's a shame that they don't have them in GP, and it's even more so a shame that we don't have them here in Ireland as well, you know. So because it is very hard to keep the girls in the sport, and I think most of the girls that do stay in the sport is probably because their parents have been in the sport and will keep encouraging them when it is hard for them. Main take home, I suppose, and this regards both management and riders, like, we're all very, very happy going over to this UCI race with a young team that have never done anything like this before, and for them to get around all with different experiences, but getting two riders into the 22nd and 23rd, I'm sure, only 15, 20 seconds behind the winner, it says it all. They rode fantastic, the whole lot of them. And I know Mark is very, very happy with them. And we're both really looking forward to the Junior Tour of Flanders with them. And the experience of the weekend just gone that they can bring into that weekend in 4 weeks' time is going to be invaluable. And please God, they'll do very well again.
So there we are. That was Paul Smith, father of daughters Mia and Stella, who raced for Brother UK on form. And what a result, Phil, to have two riders just outside the top 20 at what is effectively, you know, one of the couple classics on the professional calendar.
Yeah, a few things came to mind, actually, as I was listening to Paul. One was, we've talked on previous episodes, Tim, about the role that parents play in developing athletes in the early parts of their careers. It doesn't matter whether you're in cycling, football, hockey, netball. It doesn't matter. Parents play this really important role on ferrying you around, funding your hobby, your lifestyle, all this travel, all this stuff, funding your dream. So I think that's an incredible thing. And Paul clearly is an enthusiastic individual. I think the second thing is, it was clearly a close race with only 23 seconds between first place and 20th place. That's a close race. And I think the third thing is that it's incredible that we're seeing elite development teams giving race experience abroad, because, you know, again, Wevelgem is one hell of a hard race. So, you know, to be over there one day and then over here, you know, racing Lincoln a couple of weeks later, I think is absolutely brilliant. And that should mean that that really is creating, you know, exceptionally good riders, well experienced in the early parts of their cycling careers.
Well, let's get into it. Let's get into the meat of this episode, the Lincoln Grand Prix. Only days away now. We're recording this on Thursday. The race is on Sunday, May the 12th, and it will be the 68th edition in 69 years. They missed only 2020, and that, of course, due to COVID. It's the circuit with everything, I think. 13 laps of it for men. That's 103 miles in total. 8 laps for women. So a 63-mile race for the elite women. Each lap is 8 miles long, and each of those laps includes the climb of Michaelgate. Rafa, the clothing brand, will serve again as title sponsor, and we'll talk about their involvement in some detail going forwards, because that is a wonderful combination of an emotional connection and a commercial connection. Alexander Richardson will defend the men's title for St. Pirin. But the reigning women's champion, Robin Clay, one of our riders on Das Hutchinson Brother UK, unfortunately will miss out with a broken collarbone. This will be the second edition of the race, led by Gary Coltman, one of only a handful of people to have organised this race in its 69-year history. And I caught up with Gary to discuss all of the details.
This is my second Lincoln Grand Prix. And it came about because I organised the Lincoln Grand Prix Sportif the day before. So we'll have close to 1,000 people out in the wolds, second year running the race. So yeah, I am pretty new to it, but hey, taking over such an amazing event that's been built up so many years. Ian Emerson ran the race for many, many years. I can't remember how many, 50 years or something. I mean, it's incredible how many years and the work that was put in. And then he handed over to Dan Elmore. Dan Elmore worked alongside him for a while. He handed over to Dan Elmore. And, you know, between all of the organisers, they've built this fantastic event that's hosted the British Championships twice. And it really is like, for me, it's like being handed this gold-plated trophy that I've just got to keep it polished and shiny and make sure it doesn't get broken. And, you know, everything will be good. It's not like trying to make a trophy from scratch. I feel very honoured to have had the opportunity to take it over. The only kind of pressure I feel is to make sure I keep delivering it as well as the past organisers have done. I'm just so delighted that when I took over the event, one of the first meetings I had was with Rafa. I had to understand that I had a chance to actually run the event in terms of financial challenges, not long out of COVID. Cycling industry was starting to take a dip at that time. You know, things were not looking great for the economy. So, you know, the first meeting I had, Rafa just absolutely reassured me they were in. They love this event. They have an attachment to the event that goes back to, I think it's 2006, 2007, when Dean Downing won wearing the Rafa jersey, when they created that team. One of their first big wins, first real big win, was Lincoln Grand Prix. When they heard that it was struggling for sponsorship a few years ago, they stepped in and said, we must keep this race alive. I and the event is really indebted to them, and without Rafa, this would not be happening. Well, the key thing that I'm looking forward on the day to seeing is all of the riders getting off the bikes and saying that was a great race. Even those who have to get off the bikes early because they're not able to finish. And that will be, you know, as these level of races are, that will always be a number of riders. But I think the excitement that I'm kind of even getting through some of the emails of people have gone, oh, brilliant, I've got in the race. Obviously, you've got the guys at the top of the tree that are going to be fighting out to win it. They will have a smile, or the winner will have a smile on their faces. I think all the podiums I've seen from the previous editions have got smiles on their faces on the podium. But it's the other riders as well. You want them to come along and say it was a great race. It was a safe race. There was no traffic on the course. Safety is first and foremost. And I want to deliver a safe race that everyone loves. And I can't wait to get back again next year. But also that the public, cyclists and non-cyclists alike, and the residents of Lincoln particularly, say that was a great race. We can't wait for you to come back next year. And then, yeah, if I can stay awake long enough to have a beer at the end of the day, that would be the icing on the cake.
So that was Gary Coltman, Phil, race director, race organiser of the Lincoln Grand Prix, who I thought what rather wonderfully described looking after this race as like polishing a golden trophy.
What a one-liner that is. Brilliant. I'm sure he's completely and utterly understating the reality of what he really has to do to get this race on. I think it's a very, very modest thing to say, it really is. But I'm sure Gary and, you know, the team he has around him still have to work their socks off every year to get this race fully funded and run. Of course, it is easier. We talked about this again when we were doing the Elite Road Racing Task project, was that when a race has been established for a long time, there's almost a playbook. And it's almost when local authorities come to do their planning every year, they've already got it in their mind that, oh, okay, on this date, normally about this time, we do this. And everyone understands it. It becomes almost a default within the local authority that this is going to happen. So the economic development people, the road planning people, the people that are concerned about the city centre, all of these sorts of things, they all just already know it happens, which makes life a lot easier, actually, when you're trying to get this race, obviously, you know, on and run, compared to if you are organising a brand new race in a brand new area and trying to start afresh with somebody with a local authority that sort of doesn't get it, sees this as a major problem because they've suddenly don't have the resources or the planning, or they don't have any of that established planning that they can just sort of take out the drawer, bring out again, put on the desk and go, there you go, we're running this again, we've got all the details here. So it really does make it a little bit easier in the bigger picture of dealing with the public sector to get these things done. But it is a tremendous race, and you're right. I think that you've got to look at the whole picture when it comes to the economics and the race itself. That if you move this race to try and keep it on, but let's say you took out the Michael Gay climb, does this race have the same characteristics if it didn't include Michael Gay? Probably not. So you've got to look at it to go, it sort of has to include it, but actually, you know, when you look at it, it's an 8-mile circuit, and having sort of been round it, it follows some of the winning pattern that we talked about actually, which was, how do you perhaps have sometimes races which have shorter circuits, which means it's much more controllable in terms of what roads need to be closed down, etc. Here, can it pass through a city centre where crowds can gather? Yes, it can. Is there something about the attribute of the race itself which could be deemed as being sort of a draw? Well, yes, you've got it here in terms of Michael Gay. Is there an economic play for the local authority? Yes. When you go to the centre of Lincoln on the day this race is on, it's packed. Now, having been there, it's packed. When you go around the circuit, people are out of their houses. They're watching the race. That's taken a long time to get it to that status. But ultimately, once it's there, you can really see that that's a really rich winning pattern. That if that could be uplifted and installed into other races throughout the country, that this would be a really key part of re-energizing the UK scene.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for all of its sort of embedded success being held for so many years, it is a tough economic climate out there. And it was very interesting, Phil, to hear Gary talk about Rafa's contribution and how much of that is located in this deep-rooted emotional connection that it has to Dean Downing's victory in 2007. And we'll hear from Dean later in the episode about that. But, you know, Gary put it very bluntly, didn't he? The race wouldn't be happening without Rafa. It's their contribution is that important. He was keen to add too that he's had a lot of positive conversations with several sponsors for next year. But, you know, ultimately it's a large blue chip cycling sponsor that is keeping this race afloat at the moment.
It is. And I was lucky to work with the individual from Rafa that really helped to put this whole deal together when we were doing the road racing task force. And actually what the key to it all was actually them selling product at the race, which then generated revenues, which they could do a revenue share agreement, which ultimately then helped to offset the sponsorship. So there was a real, almost direct ROI, return on investment, that they could look at on the day to justify the sponsorship investment. And I think, well, that's absolutely brilliant. So Rafa going, yeah, they came in and saved the day, but ultimately they are also, selling product on the day, which is a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a really nice sort of version, I guess, of a sort of traditional cycle sponsorship model. Typically, the sponsor is content to, you know, to have their name on the race, in the race, so to speak, in terms of banners and the rest of it. But Rafa creating kit to sell at the event, having a revenue share model, that to me sounds like a very creative way to try and solve some of the funding issues that the bigger races face. I mean, Lincoln it's sort of synonymous with ambition in a way, isn't it, Phil? I mean, Ian Emerson transformed this race by adding the city centre section. I mean, does it sort of make a case for ambition? Is it a case of build it and they will come? Could other races benefit from having a similar vision?
Yes. And again, back to some of the things we talked about. We talked about a playbook, effectively, that I think that British cycling need to develop, which is sort of the winning pattern playbook that says, if you want a race to be as successful as it can possibly be, let's learn and bring all of the good things that are from some of the best races in the country. And it might be a few things from that race, a few things from that race, and a few things from that race, but then get plugged together to create kind of what does excellent look like. And that's now sort of in production. People are looking at that behind the scenes. So, you know, I think that it's always good to aim high when we're looking at any of these things. Aim high and then figure out how on earth you try and then fund that, resource that, plan that and deliver that.
Yeah, well, there is no lack of ambition around the Lincoln Grand Prix. They have aimed high and they consistently deliver. This has been, well, as we say, the monument of the British cycling calendar for many, many years. And wonderful that we're going to get another brilliant race this Sunday. Of course, right at the heart of this is the course. It's a course, as I mentioned earlier, that seems to have everything. There are three key areas, really. The fast, flat, open sections that sort of border or are aligned to the A57, which are very vulnerable to crosswinds. There are narrow roads like Fen Lane, where positioning is key. Get it wrong and you'll find yourself in the gutter. And then the continued climbing beyond Michael Gate on sections like Bale Gate. It's not merely a question of getting to the top of the key climb of the race. You've got to keep going. Now, this isn't my personal information. This is gleaned from Mark Botley, the manager of Brother UK on form, an acknowledged expert. Mark lives up the road in Bourne. He's raced the Lincoln Grand Prix, and he was sports director when Jesse Carriage rode to third place in 2022 in Brother UK on form colours. And he says that Michael Gate, yes, it's important, but it is only one piece of the puzzle. It's a race, he reckons, that doesn't offer the luxury of sitting up. Let's hear now from Mark.
The riders at the front, they will go hard. They don't sit up over the top. They'll keep going because they know that's the way to kind of, you know, potentially cause a split in the race. You know, a lot of races where you've got a big climb, you know, they will kind of sit up. But the thing with Lincoln is it doesn't go straight downhill. It's you get up to the top of the climb, you go through the finish line, and then it just keeps dragging over the cobbles through Bale Gate. And then when you come out the other side of Bale Gate, it's fast, wide open road. You know, it doesn't sit up. It won't sit up for probably at least a mile until you kind of then get out of Lincoln on the Burton Road. And then, yes, generally it might quieten down a little bit and groups do kind of come back together. Eventually that elastic snaps. You know, it might take two, it might take three, it might take four laps. But basically what happens is the bunch just reduce in size. And I know when you watch certain races on Eurosport, the commentators are all saying it's literally the back door is what's open and people go out the back. And the same happens at Lincoln. And yes, I know last year there was a winning break last year. I think it was six riders in a break last year. And, you know, it is a race where a breakaway will stay away. But invariably what happens is you end up probably on that last lap, you probably have 40 or 50 riders maybe coming into the bottom of the climb. And yeah, there might be one or two ahead, but invariably it is actually more or less kind of a selected bunch comes to the finish line. So yeah, positioning is important. A lot depends on the wind as well. I mean, the weather here at the moment is, you know, where I am. I mean, I'm only kind of 40 miles from Lincoln. It's been wild and, you know, windy for a while. And if it is windy, there's certainly enough exposed places on that course that could make it hard. Certainly on the run back into Lincoln. So, yeah, very challenging race. I think it's an easier race to kind of get round. I think it's probably one of the hardest ones to actually win.
There's no respite on this circuit. If you get to the top of any other climb in any other race, you get to sit up and look around and get your breath back, not at Michael Gate. It just keeps going. It drags up through Bale Gate. And then before you know it, you're on a fast descent and you're back out onto those open roads, which are often lashed by crosswinds. So yeah, there's no time to take stock here, no time to get your breath back. It's full chat all the way around.
Yes, and you know, if you've got a big team behind you, then it becomes a lot easier. If you've got a strong squad, then you know, chasing back on and all that kind of good stuff is a lot easier and get organised more easily. But if you're running in a small team, it's very, very, very important. You know, having seen the way the race was raced when I followed it in the neutral car, it was actually you just got to stay in touch. You just have to stay in touch with what's going on up the front, because once you get into sort of lap four, lap five, lap six, when things start to get a little bit more zesty on the road and people are fighting a lot more for position to get up Michael Gate, to start positioning for the last two laps, particularly if you're not in touch with that, then you're out of the race.
Yeah, it is very attritional. We see that year after year, don't we? That the riders get slowly ground down as the laps unfold. I mean, we had breakaway victories in the past. We'll hear from Becky Story later in this episode. last year, the women's race was run from a six-rider group. And of course, Alex Richardson won the men's race by himself. Could we see another breakaway this year?
Well, we know St. Piran obviously have a very strength and depth in their squad. And Alexander Richardson obviously is a quality rider. So I think he's definitely right up there as far as the fancied runners for a victory. But there's a lot going on, isn't there, in this particular race? There's a few people just turning up riding independently or one of a couple of riders that actually have got the quality to also spring a surprise here. So I think it'll, as usual, be all fireworks. We'll see the usual first two thirds of the race pretty much, you know, played out as we'd expect to see. The bunch tends to go up Michael Gate at the sort of similar speed in the first two thirds of the race. And you get obviously one or two people wanting their shot of glory from some of the smaller teams to go up there and experience the crowds. But the sensible riders in the early part of that race do not waste their energy going up Michael Gate with any sort of speed. It's only later in the race you begin to see where it really begins to sort of light up. And very interesting. I had a quick look at the Strava King of Mountain, Queen of the Mountain earlier. And it's Rory Townsend still holds the KOM on Michael Gate. And when he did that, he went up it in 33 seconds with an average power of 712 watts. That's when it's really happening, when the race is really happening, that's the sort of speed that you're going up to. So when you look at it, you need to be able to get up Michael Gate anywhere between 33, if you're racing in the men's team, between 33 and 36 seconds. And depending on your weight, you need to be putting out somewhere between 600 to 800 watts for that 30 to 36 seconds effectively. So, you know, it's quite demanding. You know, it's just an effort. You know, really experienced riders, that is just an effort and they'll be used to doing that. But of course, that effort starts to become much harder when you are on lap 12 for the men and lap 13. Because of course, you've been up it then so many times that it does start to sting the legs. And having ridden it a few times myself in the past, you know, you think, oh, the first time, well, that's not too bad. But actually ride it four times, five times, because it's tricky. It's cobbled, as everybody knows. And so people on the last couple of laps will be fighting for position because, of course, they want to get into the side of the road where there's a slightly smoother pave where they can go up the climb a little bit quicker. So this is why the race always lights up towards the end of the race, where the top riders will want to be using Michael Gate strategically to try and get away. So that's when it starts to get really, really interesting.
Yeah, this is, as we say, it's more than the... It's more than an icon of the race, Michael Gate. It has a definite impact on the finishing order. It tests the legs like no other section of the course, with the possible exception of Balegate, which follows immediately. Yeah, we're definitely going to see Michael Gate again, I think, shape this race. Something else that might shape it is the weather. We saw the men's cycle classic, sadly, was cancelled a couple of weeks ago. The Peaks 2 day, they were chopping stages and rearranging stages. As I speak now, looking out the window, I've got sunshine here on the south coast. I don't know what it's like where you are. The forecast for Lincoln this Sunday is cloudy with a low chance of rain. But what do you reckon? Are we going to get lucky with the weather this year?
It sounds like it. I'm in the northwest, Tim, and we've had two or three days of pretty nice weather. This is, of course, let's all put it in context. After a really terrible winter and hard winter, suddenly two or three days of 15 degrees feels like it's the summer, doesn't it? So I'm really hoping it will remain dry, because that just means the crowds come out. It is as important for that race that we have crowds out in numbers. If we have wet weather, it just, people stay at home, and the weather's just such an influencer in how that day plays out. So, you know, having been in the past when it's been nice weather, you just realise what a difference it makes to the volume of people actually in Lincoln City Centre.
Yeah, everything crossed for a bit of sunshine in Lincoln this Sunday. Let's move on now to talk about the contenders. And my goodness, both fields, I mean, you could make a very strong case for saying, certainly on the women's field, this is the strongest field ever assembled for the Lincoln Grand Prix. Let's start with the women. It's a provisional start list of 137 riders, which tells its own story. There are as many riders signed up for this race as for a World Tour event, and among them will be all six British-registered UCI Continental teams, which of course includes our own Das Hutchinson Brother UK. All four elite development teams will be on the start line too, but the big shock might just come from a junior team, Shipton Apex, the world's leading junior team according to the rankings, and home to Cap Ferguson, who in August will join Movistar team, to the hugely impressive Imogen Wolfe, who won the junior Trofeo Binder earlier this year, and to Lucy Glover, who last weekend won the Witham Hall road race organised by Mark Botley. Who better to discuss the men's and women's fields than Larry Hickmott, editor of VeloUK.net.
It's going to be absolutely brilliant. I mean, you look at the teams, you look at the brother-sponsored team, Das Hutchinson, which has had such success this season with the likes of Robin Clay and Tammy Miller and others. And then you've got this junior team, which apparently the Shipton one is leading the world rankings, I think, for junior teams, junior women's teams. And you've got Kat Ferguson and Imogen Wolfe to name but two. You've got the winner of the junior Gent-Wevelgem, Amelia Seaback. There's just so many big names in there. There's other names in there like Maddie Leach. Monica Greenwood's in there. She's been racing abroad. She's had a crash recently, but she's been racing abroad a lot in a foreign team. So there's just so many potential winners out of that race. Having seen the likes of Nia and Katie Archibald and others who are so great on the track, this race is not a huge race in terms of length. I think it's 60-odd miles. So for someone like Nia, who has won Madison titles and all sorts, which are endurance tests in their own right, yeah, I would not discount her. We do have probably one of the best fields of any national series race. We've got the Sickler Classic winner, Luna King, riding, and we've got the series leader from the Alba development team, Elita Shaw, who's been second in both National A races. So, you know, you should take your pick. I mean, there's a good dozen riders there who could potentially win this race.
So wonderful to hear that from Larry, a man very close to this scene. Of course, he attends every race on behalf of Brother UK and his other sponsors. And as he says, Phil, take your pick, a dozen or so riders who could potentially win this race.
Absolutely. And if you look at the history of former winners, we've got some amazing names. Lizzie Deignan in the inaugural 2015 women's edition. We've got Alice Barnes winning twice, 2 years on the bounce. Then Bex Durrell, again, a former rider on one of our teams. You know, that course always suited her and she was always a favourite when she was riding. She won in 2018 and 2019. Obviously, the race didn't run in 2020. Pfeiffer Georgie and Becky Story, you know, they're really big names in the sport. So I think that it clearly has a kudos to winning this race because of its nature and its reputation and all those kind of good things. But I agree with Larry. I think this one's really open. You know, this course favours strong riders. It just favours a strong, gutsy rider. And if you look at who's won it in the past, you'd go, look at all of them and go, strong, gutsy riders.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Bex Durrell, of course, on home road. I mean, the big question around this race, I think the women's race, is could we see a first junior winner? Kat Ferguson is arguably the best junior rider in the world right now. And of course, won the East Cleveland Classic. Imogen Wolfe, as I mentioned earlier, won the junior Trofeo Binder. Amelia Seaback, we mentioned while talking about the junior Gent-Wevelgem, she won that. I mean, British junior riders, British junior female riders right now are on fire. Could we see a junior winner for the first time at the Women's Lincoln Grand Prix?
Well, never say never, and why not? And actually, my big takeaway is, isn't it brilliant that this talent pipeline is as it is, with a list of names that you're coming out here in the junior ranks, all potentially capable of winning this race? I mean, that's an absolutely incredible place to be. So, all excitement for Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. What a testimony to the strength and depth of British female racing at the moment that we have arguably two or three of the best junior riders in the world. Let's turn our attention quickly to our own team, Das Hutchinson Brother UK. Unfortunately, they won't be starting with the defending champion Robin Clay, who broke her collarbone while on duty overseas, but they will have Charlotte Hodgkins-Byrne, who was the runner-up last year, who we heard from earlier in the episode, Tiffany Keep, our South African star, Tammy Miller, who won the Oakenclough Road Race, Alice Sharp, the Olympian. It's a squad with strength in depth. Can they overcome the handicap of not starting with the defending champion?
Oh, I think so. The squad does have depth. There's no doubt about it that, I think Ian Watson's going to be DS on Sunday for Lincoln. They have handpicked a really amazing squad for 2024. So I think that it's definitely, they're going to be in the race, competitive, and definitely looking for podium places.
Lincoln also, Phil, has an interesting history of riders with skills from sort of outside of road racing almost, doing particularly well. Paul Curran, a track rider, won the men's race four times. And we've got a very strong track rider in Nia Evans on the start list. And Joe Tindley in a different field, a crit rider, who won the British title when it was held in Lincoln, almost at the top of Michael Gate. Could we see a rider with an aligned skill set, if that's the right phrase, do well on Sunday?
Yeah, I was there that year when Joe won it, and I was so happy for her because she is, you know, as a rider, you know, really just strong, committed. She's very focused, and I think Lincoln suits her. It has suited her as a course because, of course, we talked about the effort needed to get up Michael Gate, which that explosive effort lends itself well to track riding, where often you're going to need that explosive effort in a sprint or whatever that might be. So, yeah, I think these characteristics of Nia and Joe, i.e. the ability just to lay down a lot of power quickly, providing you've got the bike handling skills to, you know, obviously cope with the cobbles, means I think you're in. You are absolutely up the front, you're fighting for position, and you've got a really good chance.
Let's move on now to consider the open race, the men's race. And here we have a provisional start list of 150 riders, headed by defending champion Alex Richardson of St. Piran, a two-time winner already. He won last year, of course, but he won for the first time as a privateer with no team support whatsoever. There are crit specialists on this start list. There are time trialists. There are cobbled classics riders among a very high-quality field with diverse skills. Matt Bostock, another former British circuit race champion, will be racing for Ribble Rebellion. John Archibald, time trial specialist, racing for Hugh Wattshop. And Tom Portsmouth, who we spoke to at the Rainer Foundation dinner, now with Bingle WB, a fully-fledged professional, but who has been racing in Belgium since he was 14. So here is a rider who is familiar with cobbled races. And, you know, just outside of those sort of headline riders, if you like, there is so much strength in depth. Toby Barnes, who finished second to Alex Richardson last weekend at the Timmy James Memorial Road Race. Ollie Peckover. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Again, let's have a chat with Larry, who watches these riders week in, week out.
Well, I spent a lot of time with Alex. We were just chatting and I was telling him about having won it twice. He's only got to win it two more to match the likes of Russell Downing and Paul Curran, which he didn't think he was capable of doing that. But certainly the way that Alex has been riding, winning the National B on Saturday and then coming up to the Cycler to ride that before it got cancelled. Yeah, I definitely think he's a top chance in that race. He knows it suits him physically, and that's important. And he knows the parkour of the race and so on. The provisional list that we've got could well change quite a bit. I don't know if St. Piran are going to change the team a lot, but the team that he's got is a lot of it's under 23. So it's slightly different to last year when you had the likes of, Sepp Kuypen and Harry Burchill and Jack Rutan Gray, et cetera, et cetera. But Richardson is definitely one of my choices. Well, I think it'll be very interesting to see how Thomas goes, because riders like him, we see them in the results, but we don't realize the work that they've got to do for their teams. And I would imagine Tom, with the engine that he's got in those legs of his, he will have done a lot of hard work. So to be able to race for himself, that will be a big thing. And it'd be very interesting to see whether he can take advantage of that. I rate Matt very highly. It's interesting that he's got this speed week going on in the USA at the moment. It'll be interesting to see how much he gains from what is like a mini stage race, if you like, coming into Lincoln, because that will obviously add to his endurance and everything, and he's got the speed to win. Yeah, it'll be a very interesting thing to see whether or not Matt can add to the Isle of Man wins it, like Peter Kenya, in the race. I rate John very, very highly. I saw him at the Dunham Trophy where he was second, and I saw the result that he had this week of a 33-mile-an-hour time trial win. John definitely still has good form and good legs and good talent. He's a rider that I do rate very, very highly, and I'm not sure whether you were going to bring this other rider into the picture, but Damien Clayton is another one. My gut feeling is Alex Richardson, because I know Alex. He's a very biting, a very determined character. You know, he knows what he wants, and when he goes out, he gives it absolutely everything. So for the men's race, you know, Alex is going to be the man to beat, I think.
So that was Larry. Phil, again, with a wonderful sort of exposition of the riders that are involved in this race. And interesting to hear him say that while he thinks Alex is capable of another two victories at Lincoln to take him level with the all-time winners, Russ Downing and Paul Curran, apparently Alex doesn't think that's within his sphere at the moment.
Well, it could just be a bit of tactics going on here, Tim, as usual, talking down your possibilities and potential, of course, puts everyone off their guard. But another name that you threw out there, which we mentioned earlier about there being a few dark horses in the race, Matt Holmes. Sources tell me Matt Holmes has been seen on Swiss Hill, which is a famous cobbled climb in Alderley Edge. For those that don't follow Velo Edge, which is the most amazing bike shop in Alderley Edge, Matt there has also been really getting Matt's position on the bike perfect. So you start putting these things together that suddenly he's getting really serious about his fit. He's seen on Swiss Hill, which is almost like Michaelgate, actually. Swiss Hill is almost identical to Michaelgate in its length, its parkour, turns, everything. It's very, very, very close to it. So former World Tour rider, think he might want to come back and mix it up. Literally could be an outsider, Matt Holmes.
Yeah, I applaud this trend, Phil, of former World Tour riders coming back. And we've seen Alex Dowsett on British Race this year, and wonderful to see Matt Holmes back. If you can win on Old Willunga Hill at the Tour Down Under, then Michaelgate should not be beyond Matt. It would be great to see him back at the sharp end. I mean, so many riders to choose from. And you know, we talk a lot, Phil, don't we, or have done in the past about, you know, the golden years, the great teams, the Rafa Condors, the Madison Genesis, the NFTOs. We might not have the teams at the moment, but if you look at the individuals, you'd have to say this was a start list to match any, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Some fantastic names on this start list. I mean, you've said a few of them now that, you know, Matt Bostock, you know, phenomenal rider, obviously, when he rode for Canyon DHB, Toby Barnes. So Toby rode for Crimson, one of the teams we sponsored. And they're really, really capable riders, you know, still racing, still doing their thing. Just don't have the same teams around them or structure around them that they used to. So, which is sad in itself, but I think it still means that we'll have a very, very competitive race. And you know, when you look back at all across all the years of some of the riders that have ridden the Lincoln, you know, Steve Jockin, the original Pocket Rocket Manxman, winner in 1980, Malcolm Elliott, very, very famous domestic rider, won in 1983, Brian Smith in 1990. So that demonstrates that all these top riders want Lincoln on their Palmares. And I think that's why we're seeing such a strong lineup and field of riders, whether they be part of a team or independent, wanting to try and see whether they can get that one as part of their racing history.
Well, who knows more really about the history of this race, who has played a greater role in it than Dean Downing, who of course won it in 2007, but has also been part of 2-1-2 finishes with brother Russell. This is a race very, very close to his heart. And I think most people feel if you ask them to close their eyes and picture the Lincoln Grand Prix, it would be that image of Dean crossing the finish line, an exhausted arm raised above his head, his face a picture of emotion, and Gordon McCauley slightly behind him. Larry Hickmott's images of that day, I think, have come to symbolise the Lincoln Grand Prix. And as we mentioned earlier, Rafa's continued sponsorship is a direct consequence of that race. Let's hear from Dean now.
It rained a lot. And that's probably why the pictures became, as you call it, iconic. It was a gritty, old, horrible day. Cold, wet, long. And yeah, just the pictures. I was very happy to win the race that day. Lincoln's always meant a lot to me. A lot to our family, with brother Russ winning it a few times as well, four, I believe. But yeah, just in simple terms, I think from a family of cyclists, my granddad came to watch me in the West Common Road Race in the early 90s as a junior, and then sadly passed away in the middle of the 90s. So yeah, with things like that going through your head at the Lincoln Grand Prix, and you'd always want to try and win the Lincoln. I've been second to Russ in 2005, where we got a 1-2. So literally into the finish, that was all that was going through my head, is this would be great if I could win this for granddad. And that's why the emotions were running high on that day. I've been pretty much talked about that on different podcasts as well. But just the whole history that the Lincoln's got, it's had Milk Race stage finishes a couple of times, I believe, at least once, where Simon Hemsel was also a good friend of mine still. Chris Walker won it, Malcolm Elliott won it. So many of my, you know, heroes of cycling in the Yorkshire Sheffield area have won the Lincoln Grand Prix. So to add myself to that list a long time ago now was pretty cool at the time. Like I said, pretty emotional. Some really cool pictures to savour and to look back on. Got a couple in my office. It brings back brilliant memories and nice memories. So yeah. It's nice to be invited on the podcast to talk about it a little bit. When Rafa did sponsor the event a few years ago, made contact with Jess at Rafa and did some talks for Jess around the Lincoln pre. Hung out with Jess and some of the spectators down at the Rafa H van at the bottom of the climb. So, you know, and then we had a meal with Simon and lots of Rafa employees and things and guests. And Simon said the same thing. And as did Jess. And I was like, oh, wow, that is really, really cool. And it was a very big win for what was essentially an amateur team at that time frame. 2007, there was like five of us. And I won the race with the help of my teammates. It wasn't just me. And it was a big thing for Rafa Condor, as it was then, to win the Lincoln Grand Prix. It had so much history. So to then, you know, a lot, what would you say, 18 years ago, to have that come back to me and say that it's really important that they sponsor the race and support it because of that day 18 years ago is pretty cool. It makes me feel proud to be part of the Rafa Condor team. That's for sure. It made me into a rider of what I have, and Rafa have done so much since then. You know, with sponsoring the Rafa Condor team, the Rafa Condor Sharp team, into JLT, into Team Sky, into EF, etc., etc. But that victory all those years ago, by us as a team and me, is still, yeah, they savour that victory, and it's why they sponsor the Lincoln Grand Prix to keep it going. So yeah, it's very cool to be a part of that history. I think outsiders looking in from Europe, for example, at that time frame would be like, oh, Lincoln Grand Prix, what is that? You know, Tour of Taiwan was a big race, won a stage there. I won the Sachsen Tour one stage in 2008, a year later, and that was absolutely my biggest race. It was in between Tour de France. There's some big teams there. So to win that stage is absolutely my biggest ever pro win. So the Sachsen Tour was absolutely my biggest win. But for me personally, it's a whole other level with what we just talked about. Like my granddad, my family, you know, local, the organizer was a friend of mine, you know, etc. So for me personally, it's a massive win. And it constantly gets brought back up like we're doing now. So it gives me great memories and it makes me proud to have won that. So personally, very big win, which continues to get talked about when potentially Sachsen Tour doesn't. Possibly lots of people wouldn't know that I won a stage of a 2.1, which is a big pro race at the same time frame as the Tour de France when Rabobank were around, Gerald Steiner, etc., etc. So yeah, it fits really, really well and a big win for me personally. But in the grand scheme of things in pro bike riding, probably not.
So there was Dean Downing, Phil. I mean, gosh, where to begin in describing that victory, the victory in the 69-year history of the race? One could conceivably argue, where do you stand on that? Is it the most iconic of the Lincoln victories. We've seen some incredible wins on that hill for the British title in the case of Pete Kenyuk and in the case of Ben Swift in 2021. Russell, of course, won it four times, but my goodness, that victory of Dean's, that takes some beating.
Well, I think when I see them next, I should have this conversation with them because I'm sure Russ will have something to say about this. You know, whose was the most iconic of all the victories? And I think another sort of interesting observation is if you look at it, sort of that Lincoln, there was a bit of a Downing dynasty across the years because Russ ran it in 2005, Dean in 2007, then Russ in 2008, 2009, and 2012. You know, across about 6 or 7 years, the Downing brothers won the race effectively five times. And as you described there, that some of those finishes were 1-2s for the Downing brothers. So I think if anyone's qualified to talk about this race, it's either of those two, but absolutely amazing. And yes, indeed, iconic imagery of Dean.
Yeah, I mean, it was Downing property, wasn't it, for many years, that race, and absolutely central, I think, to the reputation of both of these riders. Now, interesting conversation, Philip, that you and I have had in the context of the task force, the Lincoln obviously being a strong candidate on any observer's list for UCI status. And Dean made the point there, didn't he, that it's actually not his biggest win. His biggest win came in a UCI 2.1. pro race. What do you think UCI status would it have added to the prestige of Dean's victory, or is it the emotional connection, you know, racing soon after the passing of his grandfather is what makes Dean's victory there special way beyond race classification?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, the Downings, I know they're a very tight-knit family, and I can only imagine that, you know, faced with that same set of circumstances, that, you know, if you are one of, at the time, the UK's top domestic riders and you face that loss, then I think you'd want to be out on the course that day. You really would wanted to go, I want to win this because of. And so I'm sure this strong emotional connection for Dean is what makes that one really iconic.
Now, another rider who's tasted the joy of victory at the Lincoln Grand Prix is Becky Story. She won the race in 2022 after riding the last lap solo. What a feeling. She'd come back to Britain after a very strong performance at the Vuelta Andalucía, aka the Ruta del Sol, and felt the pressure to win. She says that teamwork played a big part that day, alongside patience and confidence. Those were the key ingredients. And 1 month later, she impressed by placing very strongly on Black Mountain against a world-class field at the Women's Tour. By the end of the season, she'd agreed a 2-year deal with the World Tour squad DSM Firmenich, who of course she rides for now. Let's have a listen to Becky.
I actually remember having really terrible legs, and people are always surprised when I say that. But yeah, I remember I really wasn't having a good day, and Lincoln's a really, really hard race, and one that kind of wears like you down each lap, and it's almost like survival of the fittest, sort of. You just got to get through every lap. And but I remember the weather was incredible. It was really, really nice, sunny day. And as always, the crowd were amazing. My dad was there, the first bike race that he'd ever seen me ride. So that was really, really special. And yeah, I have really, really fond memories, obviously, of that day. Leading into that race, I felt a lot of pressure. I think I'd just come back from Ruta del Sol and Andalucía with a good ride there, and with the expectation that I would perform, I would win the race, and more so from other people. And I didn't really believe that I could myself. I think it had only been 48 hours from traveling back from Spain to race Lincoln, and I was tired. I didn't feel my best. And I remember specifically having a rider like Sophie Thackeray on my team. She was an incredible teammate, and just telling me every time that you can do this, you will win this. I believe in you, we believe in you, and covering lots of moves and making sure I was in the right position. No victory is a solo one. I couldn't have done it without them, for sure. The climb, the one after Michaelgate that just keeps going, is that's where I was able to win the race. Obviously, you've got the narrow positioning into Michaelgate, which everybody fights for, and obviously that makes a huge difference if you can get there at the front, or at least in the first 10 to 15 riders. You save a lot of energy going up that climb. But then, because it's so hard, and then it carries on over the top, if you're able to keep pushing and get some sort of gap or even a small group you can win the race from there, because it then is the second half of the course goes downhill and almost turns round to the left and round the back. And if you get a gap big enough, you can be out of sight very quickly, which is a big mental advantage for sure when you're up the road and you're quickly out of sight and people behind can't get themselves together. They're almost all then fighting for second or third place and you're riding away to victory. It was full concentration probably until I got on the final climb of Michael Gate. It's one of those things that you never want to celebrate until you've actually crossed a line, because it almost doesn't feel real and anything can happen. And also, you don't have a radio. You don't know how big the gap is. You don't know who's chasing you down from behind. So I also didn't allow myself like probably any base in my mind to think, oh, well, now I've got a gap and this isn't me to the finish, because anything can happen. It's cycling. It's unpredictable, especially in Britain with the strength and depth that we've got. You can never be too confident. I felt like I was floating up that climb for the final time. And yeah, it just felt easy. The easiest time I've ever ridden it, when you're on your own, you can choose your own line, you can set your own pace, and you've got so many people cheering you on. Yeah, it's incredible. Really, really special. Yeah, it was a good day. I would love to ride it again for sure, whether it's a UCI race or even just part of the national series. If I can make it fit, I would definitely be back one day.
So there was Becky's story. Phil, who won the race in 2022 for Cams Basso, the team now known as Das Hutchinson Brother UK. And what a shock to hear that she thought she'd had terrible legs that day.
It's interesting, isn't it, that quite often when you hear rider interviews, they kind of go into one of two camps. It's either, you know, I had diamonds in the legs, you know, woke up on the morning, felt great, and off I went. Or I felt rubbish and I sort of rode into the race. So sometimes when you hear these rider interviews, it's kind of like how they start versus how they finish is very, very different in terms of how they're thinking or feeling as they roll off the line. So yeah, an incredible story to hear there, that she started the day not really thinking that actually she was going to be up to much, and yet she ends up winning it. Another interesting point there was about positioning, as we've spoken about earlier in the podcast. As you get into the last two laps, it's really, really important that you are right at the front. And the lead into Michael Gate, sort of the road's quite wide, but then it sort of narrows, and then you get that sort of dead turn into Michael Gate. And literally the fight that goes on about a kilometre out, that you see when you're in the following cars, there is a massive battle for positioning. Because if you are not positioned right and you just get tucked behind a rider that perhaps is a little bit slower than you, it's amazing how a gap suddenly appears on Michael Gate. So it's vital, and all the team managers be shouting, position, you know, fight for the front, fight for the front, fight for the front. Literally last two laps is where it all happens.
Yeah, I mean, to have the luxury of going up Michael Gate alone, not many riders experience that. Of course, Becky's gone on to bigger things. You know, we interviewed her earlier in the year at the DSM Firmenich PostNL training camp. She's now a fully fledged professional into the second year of her pro career. And you mentioned, Phil, when you were talking earlier about previous winners of the women's race, Alice Barnes, Pfeiffer Georgie, Becky's teammate, she won it to take the British title. I mean, it's a race that does seem to offer some kind of springboard into the world tour.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it's sort of specifically just this race, but I think, you know, rider needs to offer more over a season. But without a doubt, as far as your domestic Palmares is concerned, this one, you've got to have this one on it, you know, to really sort of be, to have the swagger to say, yes, I've won some of the longest or hardest races in the UK. Lincoln is right up there as far as at least something you're going to need on that Palmares when you're pushing that in front of, you know, international team managers.
Hopefully we will see Pfeiffer Georgie at the Tour of Britain Women. Sadly, we won't see Becky, who, like last year's winner, Robin Clay, is currently recovering from a broken collarbone. But wouldn't it be wonderful to see the reigning British champion Pfeiffer Georgie back on Britain's roads for the Tour of Britain Women, which starts next month, four stages, and those are being gradually released, the details of, by British Cycling. We know now that stage one will take place from Welshpool to Llandudno, 142.5K with 2,276 metres of climbing, euphemistically described in the press release as, quotes, a challenging start to the race. Stage two will run from Wrexham to Wrexham. That's 140.2 kilometres, again with 1,570 metres of climbing, including Horseshoe Pass. Stage three, the details were released yesterday. Warrington, it's a lap that starts and finishes in that Cheshire town. 106.8 kilometres, but with two QOM points on it, but almost nailed on to be a bunch finish in front of Warrington's Golden Gates. Final stage of the race, Brother UK's home territory. It's in Greater Manchester, starting outside the National Cycling Centre and finishing in Lee, and promising, quotes, some of the region's challenging climbs. This field already feels like a success. They've pulled together a four-stage race in 11 weeks. That's not bad going, is it?
It's very, very good going. And I want to go back to our podcast, Tim, where we talked about and predicted what we thought it might end up as. And I think we were bang on, which is probably a repeat of some stages, or going back to favoured local authorities where relationships already exist. So kind of, you know, the Wrexham Council, yes. Warrington, tick, yes. And Greater Manchester Combined Authority, yes. What we also said was it probably wasn't going to be a tour of Britain. It would probably be absolutely configured around where they could actually just get the race on. And it might mean it's over-focused in one area, or it could have meant massive transfers between stages. So as we've turned out here, it's pretty much the tour of Wales and the Northwest, really, isn't it? But as we said, look, we've just got to accept that for this year, this is how it's got to be. You know, it's either this race or no race. That's the choices. So it's better to have this race than no race. So I sincerely hope, and you know, I'm rather delighted, because of course, Wrexham is where we have a huge factory. Warrington is my hometown now. And obviously the National Cycling Centre in Greater Manchester is, Brother are in Greater Manchester, Brother UK's HQ, where I run. So yeah, I've got three ticks in the firm ticks in the box there for Brother branded happy times. But it will still be a great race. And I actually, I've been out and about. I was out on the bike last weekend. I'm delighted to see that on a lot of the bus stops around Warrington, posters that are, you know, advertising that the race will be in Warrington on that day. You know, that's great. So the local authority are right behind it. So what can we do, you know, as cycling fans? Let's get out there. I will definitely be in Warrington for that stage. I will probably get myself over to Wrexham, and I'll try and get to stages 2 to 4 to be on the side of the street, cheering the riders on, spending my money where I can, and doing what I can just to say, look, you know, we're here, we're supporting it. Rather than moan, I just want to go, okay, we've got what we've got, and I want to be here, and I want to be out on the streets waving flags and making the riders feel great.
Yeah, let's get behind this race. If the idea of the women's tour slipping off the calendar is, you know, almost too soul-destroying to contemplate. We've got a four-stage race. It's been put together in double quick time, and it's got some wonderful features. I mean, Horseshoe Pass, Phil, on stage two, which was intended to be on last year's route of the men's race and then sort of fell off at the last moment. It's back, and that is one of the great climbs of British hill climbing. It appears 30 kilometres from the end of stage two. It, you know, from this distance, it looks like one that could even shape the GC, shape the final outcome. What do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think what we're going to see is some pretty heavy racing on those first 2 days. I think a lot of the, you know, if you're looking, it's only four stages. A lot of the riders that are going to really fancy this race are probably going to want to be up the road on stages 1 and 2, creating time gaps as early as possible. Then, of course, we'll see stage 3, then just sort of sat in the bunch, letting the sprinters play it out. If it is close up in the GC, they'll be duking it out on stage 4. But I think it absolutely, stage 1 and 2 is going to really define the Women's Tour of Britain for 2024.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And when we think of the type of riders it might suit, well, no rider announcements yet, of course. We're still too far out, but Lizzie Deignan has appeared in several of the press releases to promote this race. She's a former winner, of course. I mean, easier to list the races that Lizzie hasn't won than those that she has. She has the veritable glittering palmares. Is this a course that could suit her, Phil?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, my goodness me, Lizzie Deignan, stage 1 and 2. You know, she'll be up the road for sure. You know, she's a fantastic climber. So, you know, I still think if she if the rumours are true and she is coming, you have to put her as a favourite for the race.
Yeah, I mean, I've got fingers crossed too for Lotta Kopecky, the world champion. This might be completely outlandish, but I know she's not riding the Tour de France Femmes this year because she's got a very heavy Olympic programme, both on the road and on the track. I wonder if this would fit into her preparation programme. What do you reckon? Could we see Lotta back on British roads having won the world title in Glasgow?
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it? That would be really, really amazing for her to sort of cement another big victory in the UK. That would be amazing. I sincerely hope we do see her here, because the more big stars we get, I think that's what we need at the moment. We really need this race to go, look, we're here, it's running, there's some big stars riding it, and we're back to that idea then of, well, let's get out and let's get it supported.
Yeah, I think both Lizzie and Lotta fit into that superstar category, don't they? Probably 20 riders in the world that completely transcend the sport, and they would certainly be among them. We'll have an interest, they feel, from the continental aspect. The UCI continental teams, 6, an unprecedented number of British registered female continental teams this year. Could they make an impression on this race?
Oh, of course. Look, the Tour of Britain is one of those races where all of the domestic Conti teams will be going, how do we get up the road? How do we get up the road today? Can we get in a breakaway? Can we do it? So without a doubt, I'm expecting to see all of the continental teams trying their hardest to be up the road and in the action.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we're going to see plenty of familiar faces to those of us that follow the domestic scene in the breakaways and hopefully in the sharp end of these races too. We know from personal experience that Das Hutchinson Brother UK has an extremely strong squad. We've talked earlier about the strength and depth of the field for Lincoln. So to see those same riders testing themselves against the world's best, my goodness, what an opportunity. Well, thank you very much, Phil, for joining me today. We've got through a heck of a lot as usual. I'm counting the minutes now to Lincoln and also to the Tour of Britain women. If you want to keep up to date with events this Sunday in Lincoln, then do follow at VeloUK or at Aussie Larry on Twitter. That's Brother UK sponsored Larry Higmott, who'll be covering the race live. And in a really welcome development, it is now possible to watch the final hour live streamed of every National Series race via a subscription to tv.monumentcycling.com. Any fan of the domestic scene will be aware of Monument's work in recent years, and they've upped the game. It's now possible to take out a subscription, get lots of highlights packages, and as I say, this live stream of the final hour of every National Series race. So do think about that. Phil, thanks again for joining me today, and thank you to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.